Call the row.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Apostolo?
Present.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
And Chairman Ritchie?
Present.
We have a quorum.
We have a quorum, so we're officially called to order on Thursday, July 10th at 12:06 p.m. And with that, we will have the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'd ask everyone who is able to stand and for Commissioner Apostolo to lead us in that. Next, I'll turn it over to Mr. Gerber for the employee recognition.
Thank you, board members and Mr. Chairman. Today is an exciting day because we announce our employee of the quarter as well as our employee of the year, and we're super excited about both of these team members who make innumerable contributions to our agency. I'd like to start with our employee of the quarter. I met this person 13 years ago when I first came to the Housing Authority. No wallflower in this person, someone who identified themselves and really told me, you know, how important our work is to residents and how important it is to see things through residents' eyes and to really understand the resident experience as a way to shape our programs and to make them better. And that the thing that's the most important here is people. Over time, from her work in management at properties, she was willing to take on a really vital role for us at Rosewood Courts and became the manager at Rosewood Courts, helping to shepherd and steer the Choice Neighborhood effort there at Rosewood Courts through all of its ups and downs. I think this person didn't know who she is. that person has continued on with innumerable roles, helping to make Rosewood a reality, helping to make Chalmers a reality, helping to make Santa Rita Courts and the evolution of that process a reality as we move closer and closer to construction. She's a delight to work with. She's planned numerous events. If you get to come to our upcoming event for the for resident scholarships, it bears this person's the markings of this person and how she thinks about the world. Coming up with the idea that you see here, just because we were talking about earlier today, the theme of this year's scholarship ceremony is seed, time, and harvest. It takes time to see those seeds grow and to reap that harvest. And this person does that in her personal life. I've had the privilege of knowing her children, and this person does it as well here as well, helping to shepherd so many other people's children and projects and programs. And it's just a joy to work with. So I want to congratulate our employee of the quarter, Sandra Winston.
Oh, wow.
So I'd ask the board would like to come and get a picture with Sandra.
Oh, wow.
Ken, I'll take a shot. Why don't we, where's the best place? Ken, you want to put the other flag over there?
We can do this.
We'll do a Texas flag? Okay.
Hey. Oh, Mr. Gerber.
Congratulations.
Oh, everybody.
Mary, you want to come over?
Oh, right.
Come on.
Oh, okay.
Can you take that?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yeah. Thank you.
She also gets one paid day off. Ooh. Just here, just stand in front of that.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I need my other paper, but I'll forget.
Beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Oh, well. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, Edward?
Yeah, I talked to Mr. Gerber this morning, not knowing this, but I wanted to say last week, of course, as y'all may have seen our Facebook page where they interviewed me for the Rosewood thing, and as I actually recollected, if that's a word, I went over and I talked to Mr. Gerber this morning, and I wanted to say this to y'all as the board member. I didn't know I was going to be able to say this, but last week I was thinking about stay the course, And going, like, with the political climate that we're in and with things changing, one thing I can say that the housing authority of the city of Austin has not changed. They have been steadfast and unmovable as it relates to elevating residents in our city as far as pouring in. I teach my children to pour into those who pour into you, and I can honestly say that Mr. Gerber, as well as Mr. Hargrove, when I first came here, I came here when my daughter was two, and Winter is now, this fall she'll be a senior in high school. I'm in college, huh? Sorry, Winter. Hook 'em horns. But with that being said, I told Mr. Gerber, I grew up at Haka myself, like, that's literally 18 years, and I, benevolence. That's one of the things that I think about, benevolence, as far as what has been poured into me. I shared with Mr. Gerber when I first started working here, me and my husband had just separated. And I moved into a property which is affordable housing, which is what we're into right now, tax credit. And the rent was very minimum, but it was a lot for a single mother. And I, when I came here, this is really a great testimony. I was making literally $13.46 an hour. Really. And I was like, okay, I'm going to have to pay my rent. So I knew I needed to go to school because I had joined the military. I was in the military and I was going to be a medic. And then I was like, oh, this is not for me. When can I get out? And then, because I didn't realize at that time that the government had funding, you know, grants. I didn't know that. And my sisters had graduated from college, but no one just really sat down with me and said, okay, you don't have to go to the military to go to school. So nonetheless, speeding forward, when I went to school, and it took me 6 years to get my associates, like literally, but I told this with Mr. Gerber, like by the time I ended, I took out grants and loans. Well, grants were mine because of my financial situation, but the scholarships, not scholarships, but the, you know what I'm talking about, though, that lot of money, the funding that the government gave me, I ended up owing $44,000, which is a lot, but because I worked at Haka, I didn't have to pay one penny of that back. So I'm saying, as far as me, Haka, not just working here, but I've also learned about the resources. I've taken advantage of all the resources. I tell my residents, reach one, teach one. I tell them, and people still call me today saying, Miss Andrew, how do I get into housing? How do I? And I tell them those things. So I'm happy. I just love Haka. And my mother, I told Mr. Gerber back in 2011, my mother came to visit me with God, and she passed away in 2019. But when she came to visit me, she came to one of our citywide meetings, and she sat around and she heard the residents talk about all the good things that the housing authority was doing. And my mother stood up and gave her testimony. She was like, I'm jealous, but she was saying it in a boastful manner, like she just knew that had we had a housing authority behind as a Haka housing authority, that her children would have swore just so much more. Because as I told y'all before, I grew up in public housing. I think we were probably the first, this is in Tennessee, we were probably the first black family at our housing authority. And this was, I was born in 69. I think we moved there in 72. So I was probably two. And then when I graduated from high school, then I joined the military. And then years later, I circled life. I'm back here at the housing authority, and I say this to people. I'm back in the industry that I grew up in, and I'm proud of what I do. I'm proud. I was at bingo the other day. I'm a bingo too, y'all. I've taken on that. And someone's going through, and I was like, did I just see you on Facebook? I was like, yeah. She's like, I just love everything, because there was a lot of myths about Rosewood and the housing authority is going to sell it to UT and they're going to give dorms. And I was like, no, no, no. And I would be in the beauty shops and I hear people talking. I'll come up under that from under that dryer. That's not true. Well, you don't know. They did this to so-and-so. I said, that's not what Haka's doing. And you don't know. I said, I do know, because I work for them, and I am them. And I was like, you not go bad-mouth Haka. But I just want to tell y'all, Mr. Richie, gosh, y'all, there's a little phrase that we say nowadays, y'all do that. Y'all did that. Y'all are doing that. And just long story short, I'm going to get off the mic. Stay the course. I really, next year, I think that's going to be my thing for the scholarship ceremony. Stay the course. So I'm planning that, and I'm going to cultivate that too. So stay the course, and thank you, the Housing Authority, for this day. I'm really, really, really honored, and my children would be honored, and my mother would definitely be honored. So thank you. Thank you.
Okay, that's a tough act to follow, but we've got Employee of the Year. So it's really exciting to have this member of our team be acknowledged as Employee of the Year. You know, so much of what we do here is, you know, forward thinking. It's, you know, what Sandra was talking about, which is the work with residents and clients. And so, you know, all of us try, you know, who are in executive, who are in, you know, finance, who are in HR, who are in procurement, who are in, you know, TMI. We're all focused on trying to lift up those who are working most closely with the residents. And that's really where, you know, not a lot of attention gets paid, but if you don't get the back end of the shop right, you can have real problems. And we're so lucky that we have extraordinary professionals who lead in each of those areas. And, you know, one of the areas that has, you know, been changing, you know, over the last 7, 8, you know, years, 9 years, you know, has been in our area of technology. You know, our management information systems department changed its name to Technology Management Innovation, because that's what's really required these days. We really do need to innovate. We need to be thinking about, you know, how to make better uses of our technology, how to access the capabilities of AI, how to access other you know, advancements that are happening, so that we can stay really current and be bold, and to have the underpinnings that we need, you know, across all of our systems. Every part of this agency is tethered to the internet. Every part of this agency is tethered to technology. And if that doesn't work at its peak, we all pay the price for it. And that means that our residents pay the price for it. We are so fortunate to have incredible leaders in technology management and innovation that's headed up by Jorge. But there is one person in that division who really over the last year has demonstrated incredible skill and has been a source of joy and expertise to so many here. Michelle Eastland. Has been with us for many years. It's hard to say just how beloved this good person is. She has helped to steer so many different projects, has helped to lead, has helped to manage, and has helped to guide. She is one of the most popular people in the office because she never says no, and she never says that there's not a solution. She always works hard to try to figure out an approach to help somebody. It may not be the approach the person thought it was going to be, but it's the one that's right for our agency and for the outcomes that our residents and our clients need. And she really has a servant's heart that's really committed to helping our team members get it right so that they can do their job and serve people really well. We've had some really hard technology transitions, haven't we?
Yes.
Yeah. Still going. So, see, we were lucky she could pull away today to work, because she's been so involved in so many of so much of that work. But you're indispensable to our team, and we're so fortunate to have you, and we're so proud that you're our Employee of the Year.
Thank you.
Your plaque goes in your face.
Oh.
There you go. And you also get 2 days off this year. So enjoy that. Let's get a picture with the board.
All right. All right.
Everybody say, I still hate my computer.
I can't be Sandra's speech, so it's an honor to be welcomed to IT. I know we're like the small group that's hidden behind the whole team, but because most of the people work out in the properties to handle most of the issues and helping the community and everything, but we're like behind them, helping out with all their technology and stuff, so just keeping me busy while all these changes coming along, so thank you so much.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I love starting board meetings this way. Okay.
We're having technical difficulties. The camera's not working, so the microphone is working.
Okay.
I just need to check with the people on
the stream.
Give me
Sure. We're going to hold for just a second.
Can you hear us? Can you hear us? You're okay with what's happening?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Our microphone went out. I had to quickly figure something else out, but let me know if something's not working.
Thanks, Jorge.
Okay, great. We'll move on to the next part of the meeting. Mr. Chair, there's no public communication. Just to confirm, is there any member of the public who would like to speak to the board? Seeing none, we'll move on. And with that, ask Lupe Garcia to come forward, who chairs our citywide advisory board. Hi, Lupe.
Hello.
Come on up.
Mr. Chair, I actually logged in to speak. I don't know if you can hear me.
Oh, we apologize. Ms. Joseph, is that you?
Yeah. It is me. Thank you, Mr. Gerber.
So we'll go back to public communication. And Ms. Joseph, you have 3 minutes to address the board.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Zenobia Joseph. On a technicality, I just would say there used to be a phone number that we could call in, but the number that's on the agenda is actually the automated service, and it's not very helpful. My room was, where I'm at, is quiet, and it said there was background noise. At any rate, I just wanted to ask, specifically the December 18, 2024 board meeting is not posted still. It says the audio is not available, and so it would seem that that would violate the Texas Open Meetings Act, and there are also other audio files that are not posted as well, October 2023. For example, I just want to call your attention, your vision, residents, healthy health and safety. And I just wanted to remind you that the Heritage Wood property is unsafe. And I would just ask you to enter into an interlocal agreement with Texas Department of Transportation. That is there right away. It is across from the city of Austin's Walnut Creek Metropolitan Park, as you're aware. Specifically, that's in Councilmember Mike Siegel's district. There is no sidewalk there. And I want to provide a little data from 2020. There were 37,500 vehicles per day on North Lamar, 3,900 crashes. 71 of those crashes were pedestrians and cyclists. As you may be aware, the bus stop is mid-block. The city of Austin, you may have an interlocal agreement with them, but there needs to be a sidewalk to Not Your Ordinary School. They have over $47.5 million for sidewalks for the students. But if you're in a wheelchair, walker, or a cane, you can't leave the Haka property to get to the school. And so I recognize that you're doing good things, and I do appreciate that we can expeditiously at least enter the Zoom meeting. But I do want you to recognize that the city of Austin has approximately $300 million that passed through TxDOT. And I know Haka is a separate entity, but I would just ask you to expedite that item. And specifically as it relates to the HUD-VASH voucher program, I will put in an open records request. As I've mentioned to Mr. Gerber in person, Andrew Miller refuses to comply with the Federal Register, which was August 13, 2024, and I don't know what Haka's position is on that. I briefly talked to Mr. Gerber when I was there in person the last time, but the issue is that there is a handbook that is given to Central Texas veterans, and it includes Austin and the Central Texas area, and it all specifies case management, but the Federal Register specifies consultation with the veteran. And I will lastly just say I appreciate the 3 minutes, but it is 3 minutes for this and 3 minutes for your entities as well, like the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. So when Mr. Gerber asked your counsel if that was correct, she actually engaged in viewpoint discrimination. It was 3 minutes for general public comment, but not for the actual entities. And so I was denied an opportunity to speak specifically for that. If you have any questions, I'll gladly answer them at this time, but that is my ask is for you to recognize, and lastly, just that the Belvoron deals do not permit people with evictions to live there, so a voucher is actually needed to enter those properties. So it goes against your goal six, which is DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, racial and social equity. If you have any questions, I'll gladly answer them at this time, and appreciate you going back to allow me to speak. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask Ms. Joseph just a quick question. I appreciate you giving us something tangible at Heritage Wood. Have you talked to the City of Austin Pedestrian Safety Department? Because I know that, you're right, they do have money there, and I wonder if there is a way to see if we can get sidewalks there that would be. Have you talked to them about this issue yet?
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Actually, I've talked to the Assistant City Manager, Stephanie Hayden Howard, over the Austin Public Health, and then there's Mike, a new Assistant City Manager over Transportation, and I apologize for not having his last name. I spoke to both of them, and Mike Siegel says he's on top of it, but what I will tell you just real quickly is that you'll see the red sidewalks, the multimodal sidewalks that are aesthetically pleasing in Southwest and Central Austin, but North Lamar, even though the money has been there since the 2010 bond election, $91 million, and then $482 million was allocated for that corridor in 2020 by TxDOT, that is getting diverted because, I hate to say it, but it's the poor people and the people who are of lower income that live in that area, and their Vision Zero member actually, you know, the manager actually admitted that when there was a Caveview story, just so you can have context, the Caveview story is called Dangerous by Design. Erica Proffer was the person who did it, and they interviewed Joel Meyer, the Vision Zero officer, and he just said that there were 75 people hit in 3 miles on North Lamar between North Lamar Transit Center and Peyton Gent, and they still didn't do anything about the sidewalks. Gentleman was actually killed mid-block there,
yeah,
and
no.
Where your property is, it's mid-block too. So there are many entities. The bus stop is Capital Metro. There needs to be a pedestrian hybrid beacon. That's the City of Austin. And then it's TxDOT's right-of-way. So that is why I came to Haka to ask if there's anything that you can do. I've done as, you know, on my end, I have consistently talked, testified before City Council. But that hasn't expedited it. But you will see downtown just by the Capitol where they have put the red. It's terracotta, the sidewalks. And even in your airport area, you'll see the we call it terracotta, multimodal, but that's not what you're going to see where it's most dangerous on North Lamar. So if you can assist, that would be helpful.
Sure. Thank you for that, Ms. Joseph. I know both Joel Meyer and Stephanie Hayden Howard and Suzanne Schwartner, who works with Ron Kowals here, and they work extensively on in helping with the management of that asset. We'll be in touch with them, and yeah, thanks for giving us something that we may be able to lend a hand on because we want people to be safe. Let me turn to others. Are there anyone else, just to double check, that anyone else in the public wishing to make comments? Anyone else online? Okay. Thank you again, Ms. Joseph. Turning to Lupe and Ms. Garcia for a report on the Citywide Advisory Board.
Thank you again. Okay. Minister from June 10th. I called to see why. Citywide board meeting was called to order at 10:31 a.m. Veronica Castillo Perez, Vice President of Citywide Board, read the minutes from the last Citywide Board meeting. Alice Madrid, President of Guests, and provided the Treasury report. The balance is $3,600. Presentation was Michael Gerber, President and CEO, joined by a phone call, and acknowledged that there's an increase in violent acts of behavior and crime on Haka properties and across the country. APD has been struggling for a few years, and Haka has continued to collaborate with the residents and APD to address safety concerns because there is a shared responsibility. Tamika Gilmore, Community Director, on behalf of Michael Roth and Pammy, updated that 3 HUD inspections will be conducted this year, Santa Rita, Gaston, and Coronado. Please encourage your neighbors to take advantage of the Rent Cafe to pay rent online and submit work orders. Have an emergency plan for the Texas summer heat. Austin Pathways Updates, Lilana Villegas, Senior Director of Community Development. Congratulations on a very successful Senior Mayfest. The theme was Vegas Nights and Lights. We received very positive feedback from attendance, and we have a record-breaking year with 40 Haka resident scholarships recipients, a total of $75,000. Donna McGreen, Youth Education and FSS Manager. 25th Annual HACA Resident Scholarship Ceremony is July 25th at the UT Elementary at 11 a.m. Jeanette Chavez, Digital Inclusion Coordinator. There is a new cohort of ACC interns who will be providing Van Cafe technical assistance to residents at Santa Rita and Lakeside. Ken Bolden, Senior Director of Communications, introduced Darren Green, Marketing Communications Specialist. Barami Lee, Bringing Health Home Manager, is bringing health home partners with Austin Public Health to provide overdose prevention and training programs across all HACA properties. Sandra Winston, Event Specialist, the theme for this year's scholarship is Seed, Time, and Harvest. The meeting was adjourned. Beverly Arnold, President of Chalmers, made a motion to adjourn the meeting. And I, myself, President of Citywide and Santa Rita, second the motion. The meeting was adjourned at 11:29.
Commissioners, are there any questions?
I have a comment.
It's a comment. The iMoms, Lupa CEO, they have raised over $200 to donate to the people in, in the flooding areas that were in lost lives and whatnot, so that's they've already raised over $200.
Who are you contributing that money to, Lou?
We kind of pick, we have two places we want to send it, either to Brenner, Texas, and to Leander. I know Carville has a lot of help right now, but I did some research, and those two counties there don't have a lot. So we want to be able to make sure we're still going to raise money this weekend to see how much we can get over to them, to those two places. So we're going to see who we're going to donate.
Will you give it to a nonprofit there?
Yes.
Good.
To a nonprofit.
So whatever you raise total, in addition to the 200, HACA will match.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I also, on iMoms, I am totally over 102 iMoms, which I'll be hosting, doing another iMoms meeting at Meadowbrook. They have 18 iMoms. So it's getting to where I'm having to divide now the times, because we don't fit anymore in the community room. So I'm like, okay, should I accept more iMoms, or should I not, or should I? I don't know what to do now because I'm over the limit.
We're gonna be able to help you soon.
Yeah.
If you say okay. The end, we have a tour. We may have some space that we may be able to share with our iMoms.
Okay. So I partner off with iMoms. Also partner off with Human IT from California. And they're going to send us for iMoms educational ongoing 80 Chromebooks.
Oh wow! Congratulations. Chromebooks.
Chromebooks. Uh-huh. So nice. They're going to send us 80. And while I'm going to be working with Dynamic, because it's not only for iMoms, what I want to do is also provide some for the FSS residents or in the FSS program. So they can continue their education. And so that's one of the biggest things that we're going to be doing. And that's about it. Just keep working.
Two things I want to highlight to the board that you said. One is that you mentioned security at the properties.
Yes.
And that's something that we've talked about in several different community-wide advisory board, citywide advisory board meetings. Last year, a little over a year ago, the chairman and I and others did a breakfast meeting, and I think we want to try to reconvene that in the fall, and we'll work with the chairman's schedule and board member schedules to figure out a time, maybe in the morning of one of the board meetings, to do another resident leader breakfast, and maybe we'll identify some topics, but one of those topics will definitely be safety and security. We want to continue to build on the progress we made last year. So with your, we'll get the two presidents, the president and the chairman, and figure out your schedules and see if we can make something like that work. The second thing I wanted to is that thing you highlighted, which is 40 scholarship recipients, $75,000 approved by the board. And I think that's an applause line. I'm really excited that we're coming up on the 25th. So we're excited to see everybody there and look forward to, especially to seeing those board members who are able to attend. Yeah, thank
and
you.
And I am an Ephesus. I joined Ephesus. Yeah. I'm part of it. So.
And you're a scholarship recipient.
Yeah. Not this year.
But she is
an official Ephesus. She's an official Ephesus case.
Oh, right now.
Who is
right
going
now.
To be graduating, hopefully in less than 5 years. So
congratulations.
Well, maybe not five.
Less than that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for the support. Thank you, Mary. Mary's one. My number one. Back up.
Thanks. I do want to just, you know, she talked about violence on the properties. Is she talking about violence of the person, property crimes? Can you elaborate a little bit more?
Michael Roth, our VP for Pathways Asset Management, will come up. In general, it's property crimes. There's been, you know, we're seeing more people coming onto the properties that really do, you know, concern us. And there's just a lack of APD, and we've talked directly with APD about it.
Right.
Why don't you talk about what you're seeing and also what we're doing?
Sure. In direct answer to your question, the majority of the actions we're seeing are property crime. There are some personal crimes, and as it was already mentioned, there's a significant amount of it is coming from people who do not live on the property, who are coming onto the property to commit these crimes, either after hours, usually after hours, but even sometimes during business hours, we're seeing that as well. So we've taken a little bit of a different approach to security. We're working on using a lot of data information that we get from APD and other sources about what crimes are and to highlight where we want to focus our security attention. And we have everything from cameras, tower cameras, to just regular cameras, to we work with three different security companies. We work with APD off-duty officers. We work with coordinating with district reps as well and to do as much as we can to provide a very robust approach to security, not just a one-size-fits-all.
It's an ongoing thing, and we do have we can share with the board, but not in a public setting, some of the activities we have going on. Suffice to say, we're taking advantage of a lot of technology, and we're hopeful that APD will have more resources to throw at us. We do have an extensive contracts with off-duty police officers that we utilize and private security, and we also have, as you might imagine, you know, extensive use of cameras and other types of technology. But we can go be more specific on a property-by-property basis if you're interested, but again, not in a public setting. Thank you, Michael. Okay, Mr. Chair, you want to the consent agenda, which is... Oh, sure. On the chairman's behalf, the first item is the consent agenda, presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on May 29th, 2025. Apostolo moves to approve.
Second.
Duncan Hall seconds. Is there any comment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
And the motion passes. The first action item is presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution number 2907, approval to renew the in-schools case management and property-based tutoring services contract. This is the contract for communities and schools. Sharon Vigil, who's the president of CIS, is on the Zoom. She's doing yeoman's work up in Washington, D.C. today, but this was important and she wanted to be here. Forgive me, Lauren, right? Lauren, and do you want to see if it's Diana, and what's your other colleague's name? Christian and Diana, you guys are both welcome to come up as well. Why don't you introduce yourselves to the board, and then we'll let you proceed with your presentation as you'd like. This is the annual renewal of the communities and schools contract, and so we're going to take a little more time today and give you all a report out on the work that we're doing through CIS. And then Leilani and Dominique are going to take over and talk a little bit more about not only the work CIS is doing, but the summer programming that we have to keep the kiddos engaged. So introduce yourselves to the board, all of you, and then as you speak, and then we'll turn to you.
Okay, maybe I'll start. So good afternoon, Board of Commissioners, HACA staff, and distinguished guests. My name is Leilani Limviegas, and I serve as the
Senior Director of Community Development for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. I'll pass on the mic, but just so we know, we do have Sharon Vihil, who is joining us from Washington, D.C., who will be doing the presentation for the contract renewal. We also have Regional Director Lauren Woods. We've got Chief Administrative Officer Deanne Shercliffe and Christian Casais, the Chief Communications Officer. So they're here if you'd like to say hello before we start the presentation. Oops. You're welcome to.
Hi, Christian Clark Casades. Thank you guys for having us. On a side note, just so familiar with the HACA and Communities and Schools Partnership after serving a decade as an Austin ISD administrator. Just want to thank you, and to use the words of Sandra D, thank you for staying the course for our children in all of our schools.
Good afternoon. I'm Diane Shercliffe. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer at Communities and Schools. I have been with CIS for 30 years, and the HACA partnership and our Smart Kids program has been just important to us for such a long time, and we appreciate your support of that program and the students and families that we work with.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Lauren Woods, the Regional Director of Programs for Communities and Schools of Central Texas, and today is actually my one-year anniversary with CIS, and thank you. And I just am so honored to get to work for CIS and to get to be a part of this beautiful partnership. Our Smart Kids program in collaboration with the Housing Authority has done some really wonderful work, and we're excited to talk to you about it today.
And good morning. My name is Dominic Green, and I'm the Youth Education Success and the Family Self-Sufficiency Manager with Austin Pathways, and I will be helping with this presentation.
And just to connect the dots, so you all know that Barbara Jackson left. You all worked. Barbara did this job for many, many years. Dominique has been with us for a while now. 4 years? 3 or 4 years? Two and a half. Seems like longer, doesn't it? And we're so fortunate to have her stepping into this new role. So welcome to it, and thanks for stepping up to it.
Yes, thank you. So, yes, and Dominic used to be the family self-sufficiency coach for Santa Rita. So now she has been promoted to this position, and she knows the program very, very well. So with that, we'll start our next slide, please. Jorge, or do you have the clicker? Yes. Right. So today we are going to be discussing Board Resolution Number 02907. I'll do a quick overview, and I'm going to give it over to Dominique. But based on the HUD sole source provider, and we've had this partnership for a very long time, since 2001. Just wanted to give you up front what we are going to present on is the contract renewal for 2 years. We had it for 1 year. We're going to do it for 2 years with board approval for $650,000 a year, which is a $50,000 increase from the past years with a total amount of $1.3 million. So with that, I will go ahead and hand it over to Dominique for more context.
And just briefly, CIS, or Communities and Schools, they service their Smart Goods program services four currently HACA properties that are listed here, and then also eight of the AISD schools where they in-service programs in the school.
One of the pieces before we start is the sole source provider has a lot to do with the fact that they're the only nonprofit youth educational organization in Central Texas that has the bandwidth to be not only at HACA property, but also have services at our AISD campuses. So with that, I want to turn it over to Ms. Sharon Vihil, CEO of Communities and Schools. Next slide, please.
Well, good afternoon, trustees. I'm so happy that I was able to join. These are the reasons why I love Zoom. Just know that my heart is there, and I sent CIS full force, some of our top people, to make sure that they're in the room with you. Commissioners, I want to start by sharing a little bit about a long-term impact study about CIS. When I come to present to you all, you all are asking, well, what happens to students after they graduate? Well, guess what, commissioners? Harvard has done two studies on CIS. So most recently, this independent evaluation from Harvard and Cornell confirmed what you and I have known, you know, for a very long time, that CIS does make a lasting difference. What you see here is that the study shows that in schools that have full CIS implementation, the graduations rate increased by 7.5% over 3 years. The students, this study also found that CIS had a particular strong impact in high poverty schools, largely through improving attendance when it is scaled at full implementation. So what this means is that our model has been proven to close the achievement gap by 7%. Next, please. And not only does the study show in-school impact, but it also talks a little bit about long-term impact when it comes to economic mobility. And so Harvard conducted a second study that they looked at data for 20 years. This data for 20 years included 7 million Texas students. So this was a very localized study. They received data not through us, but through the census, through TEA, through Workforce Solution, and College Board. They grabbed all of this data and they studied our students past their 30 years, right? So this means that the data that I'm going to share with you, this impact, is not about the second grader that we served last year, but it's about students that we've been serving for 25 years. As you all know, we will be celebrating our 25-year anniversary with you all here soon. And so what this data found was that students graduated at higher rates when they went to a CIS school, but that their future earnings were greater than those students that did not go to a CIS student, a comparison group. So by age 26, students were earning about $1,500 more, and this means that they have an increased lifetime earning of over $100,000. I don't know about you, but I sure would love another $100,000 in my pocket. And what this also showed that when we looked at students when they were at 30, at 30, we have been able to close the income gap between low and high poverty schools by 20%. So I know that you all love data and research, and so I wanted to share that with you. And we know we work, and it also feels really good when you have Harvard and Cornell that study you without knowing, and then they prove that you work. So I hope that this is a testament to our partnership, because that data that you all see there is also data that you all have helped us collect. Next, please. So let's talk a little bit about what we did in the past year. So in the past year, we provided over 16,000 services to your HACA students and in the community. That included more than 9,000 hours of direct service, and over 3,100 of Smart Kids sessions. That is our after-school, out-of-school time programming. What you will also see is that we conducted over 300 home visits. This means that we are meeting families where they're at. We're not asking them to leave their housing site, and we're actually going to their apartment and having a conversation and making sure that they have the resources that they need. Next. So all of this that we did has some really great data. So what you all will see is that 100% of HACA students that were case managed and Smart Kids After School program stayed in school, and that 99% of them graduated or were promoted into the next grade level. That is a great accomplishment. And what I did is I gave you the comparison of CIS students, because I want you to be so proud of how your students are outperforming. But another thing that it's important to really talk about is look at this 88% of HACA students that were case managed, and 97% of students that received HACA and case management, how well they did in all their academics, attendance, and improvement scores. And so we're really proud of how they're outperforming. Next. You might be asking, how is this possible? Well, this is possible because we really provide intentional and deep work to both to HACA students, both on school and at their site. So if you'll see here, on average, an AISD student is receiving about 17 hours of direct CIS service. A HACA student that is just receiving case management on campus is receiving about 28 hours. But if you look at the students that are receiving both on campus and then on their housing authority site, they're receiving on average of 55.2 hours. So we know the more hours that we provide, the more students are trusting us, the more we're able to be in relationship with parents, and ultimately the stronger outcomes we're getting. So when you are looking at what is CIS doing and how are we doing it, I hope that this gives you a little bit of a glimpse, not just of that, but also the in-depth work that we do. Next. Here are some pictures and some activities that we've been able to bring your sites. So our Smart Kids program offers students a safe and enrichment space every day after school. So we provide arts and crafts. We do STEM and cooking days. We bring in partners like the Mexican American Cultural Center, who comes and does a great 3D and culturally relevant programming directly on sites. We now also have two full-time AmeriCorps members that are providing near peer support, and we are bringing a lot of partners. And the other thing that I will say to you is this summer, we've already taken your students to 12 field trips, because not only do we want to provide services on their site, but we want them to know that this is their city and they shouldn't have to pay to explore their city. And so our field trips allows them to do that. Next. I will keep this one really brief. We also partner with you all to do a college access and scholarship support program. One big highlight is that this year, one of your HACA students is a finalist for the Dell Scholars Scholarship, which means that if they are selected, their entire schooling would be paid, plus they would also be receiving additional case management. So we're really proud of the post-secondary access work that we're doing. Next. And in addition to all the services that we provide, we also provide direct family cash assistance. So this year we've provided a little bit over 83,000 in family cash assistance. And what I wanted to share with you all is this. What's striking about this is that while HACA students represent just 3.8% of all of our CIS students that we serve, they receive over 12% of all of our assistance funds. And, you know, that for us falls right in line. We know that our HACA students face many, many, many barriers, and CIS is right there making sure that they have the resources that they need and that we're walking alongside of parents and that we're doing that with dignity and respect and making sure that we're meeting them where they're at. And this is my last slide. Last time that I presented to you all asked me, so tell me the full cost of the program. So what you all see here is that the full cost of our program, just staffing and program supplies, is about $1.2 million. Additionally, we provide about $84,000 on average every year for financial assistance. So when we're looking at this, our total program expense is about $2.3 million, and the former contract was at $600,000. So our current leverage funding that we have to go out and find is over $500,000 to make sure that we're able to provide all these full wraparound services. So we are really grateful for your vision. We're also grateful for your attention to this budget, and we are really grateful that you all are increasing your support to CIS. Thank you all for letting me join virtually, and I'm going to hand it back to Leilani and take any questions.
Next slide, please. And so with that, the HACA staff recommends for the board, we're asking for $1.3 million for a two-year contract with the communities and schools. Would that increase from $600,000 to $650,000 per year to provide the in-school case management and enrichment tutoring service for HACA youth? So with that, I will open it up for questions or comments. We're happy to entertain those at this time.
I have a question. I am always pleased in getting these reports and finding out more information about what CIS does for the Housing Authority students. But I still lack what I call specific information about how they are serviced. Now, in the report that you provide as part of the agenda item, you say that 296 HACA students were served by CIS Smart Kids through case management and or after-school programs. And I'm particularly concerned about the after-school programs and what, in fact, they specifically provide to how many students and how many hours per student. For example, we know that reading is absolutely critical for student success. We also know, at least according to recent data, that students lose about 20% of what they have learned during the summer if there's no intervention. So I'm curious to know how much of the after-school time is spent on improving student reading skills and how you can measure whether or not that improvement has occurred.
So the programs that they have, and just let's make sure that we understand, so there's a tutoring program, but they also address mental health, right? So the reading is a component, but a lot of the students that do attend those, I guess, counseling sessions on Austin ISD campus are children that are dealing with more than basic needs. It's things that are happening internally, mental health, sexual abuse, drug abuse. So what communities in schools does is they really want to prepare our children to make sure that they are healthy enough to get the reading and get the math and pass the test. So
but
there is the component
is
for reading.
Is that part of the case management?
Yes, it
that
is.
They are doing? That's what I'm assuming.
Yes.
That would be part of case management.
That is correct.
Which would be separate from the enrichment activities that I'm talking about.
We've had students that, and I've met with CIS students where when they go to class, when they go to school, they get their breakfast, and they don't necessarily go to class. Why? Because they're just very emotionally distraught about something that happened at home. Mm-hmm. So they'll go see a CIS counselor, and they're allowed to do that on campus, mm-hmm. which helps because it doesn't really serve a student who's having emotional or mental health issues to come into a classroom and will not retain absolutely anything because they're worried about what they're going to eat. My parents fought. My father's in prison. So I just want to make sure that there is that component, but we want to get them prepared emotionally in order for them to succeed in a classroom. So does that answer your question, Commissioner? I just want
no.
to make sure.
It does not.
Okay.
I'm still trying to get specific numbers.
And
you can tell me you've served 296 students and you've done this in case management and after-school programs, but I still don't know specifically what you have done.
Do you want to talk about that, Lauren, about the
yes,
specific?
Yes, I can. I'm going to jump in. I'm going to go ahead and jump in. Thank you for that question. So every month we actually present a report to HACA, which includes the unique identification number of each child and the services that they've attended. So what I would propose is that maybe, Leilani, you and I can set aside a meet and see how much detailed information we can provide so that we can provide that as an addendum for your future meetings. The other thing is that I know I have asked and would love for you all to attend a campus visit where you actually get to see our CIS room on the school, but also doing a site visit where you can see the activities that we do. Additionally, I do have a presentation that I can share with Leilani that talks a little bit about our model and everything that we do. For today, I had a limit of 7 slides, but I snuck in 2 more. And so what I can also recommend is that I can come back to another board meeting or I can present this to Leilani and to be able to share that level of in-depth information. But I want to say that I am so happy that you all want to learn more and want to know details. That tells us that this is a great partnership, and we want to be able to provide that and present that to you. So thank you for that question. And Leilani, you and I hope we'll meet to make sure that we get everything that is asked for.
Yes, ma'am.
So Leilani, let me ask you a question. So of the students who go through CIS, do we track how many of them actually participate in our graduation ceremony?
Yes.
So that would be helpful to have that number. So, and this is really what kind of struck me when I was thinking about the in-home services. And it's so give me a minute so I can just sort of lay the predicate for this question. So at our very first scholarship ceremony, we had 10 people. Went really, really well. Then afterwards, there was a gentleman, an older gentleman, who was one of the scholarship recipients, came up to me and, you know, basically said that he had got the scholarship, he was happy and everything, yada, yada, yada. He got it, but his daughter didn't. Part of it is he didn't, you know, give her the application. He took it himself and did it. So my question is, I think about the coming in house, coming into a home, dealing with all the social issues you got to deal with the home. Do any of the kids who go through the program and get the scholarships, do we also see their parents there? My sense is that the issues you're addressing within the home to make sure that the kid can learn well also benefits the parent. So that's maybe kind of a convoluted question, but I'm trying to find empirically that the services benefit just not the student and their ability to learn, but it's also having a beneficial impact upon the parent.
So I want to turn it over to Dominique, because that is part of the Family Self-Sufficiency Program, which is a program that services the entire family. So you want to give an example, perhaps, of maybe a parent. We do have a two-generational program also at Booker T. Washington and other properties that does serve not only the parent but the child at the same time, whether they're learning a welding class, and there's also a STEM class happening. But the Family Self-Sufficiency Program does serve the whole family, right, the mom, the dad, even the grandparent. And what we learned from the scholarships is we really try to make it easy for anyone who's willing to take either a trade school, a certification, or community college or university for that. That's why this year is going to be our largest. 40 is our largest ever group of scholars ever in the history of HACA. So do you want to talk a little bit about the Family Self-Sufficiency Program? So they.
And let me just say, make one other comment before. I empathize with the comments from my fellow commissioner, because the first time CSI made when Suki made the presentation, it was hard for me to grapple with, but it took me a while to realize it's more than just educational enrichment. The things that you're able to do with the parents in terms of, in some cases, helping the parent communicate better with the child, getting the child to open up with the parent, to get the parent to understand some of their behavior, how it impacts the child's ability to learn. Those are somewhat intangibles that are hard to document, but nonetheless, it actually comes out. And that's why I was trying to find an empirical way to basically show that. Yeah, I know Sharon is. I'm just saying, when Suki made the presentation at first, it was hard for me to follow, because I thought CIS, the way I had been introduced and oriented in CIS, it was an after-school program for education. Suki helped me understand it's more than just education enrichment. It's really to address all the issues within the home itself. And so just a little bit, you know, part of it was, also thanks to Sylvia, you know, she kind of helped enlighten me in her past work when she was a caseworker dealing with, forgot the agency, but when you had to go testify on behalf of kids who were being abused and Child Protective Services, and then thinking about my own upbringing and other folks who I hear about. So it helped me better understand what CIS does. And so, and that's why I'm, to help make my fellow commissioner more comfortable, I'm trying to figure out a way to help address, to help show the empirical stuff, because at the end of the day, you got to show the benefits. And those are, in the legal world, where you talk about soft tissue injuries when somebody gets in a car accident. So it's not soft skills, but the skills that you are having, you're trying to address a problem and you're trying to go through behavior modification, and it's hard to measure unless you actually get a chance to see it. And so for me, if I see that there's a kid who struggling in school, but they're able to do well, and all of a sudden the parent is doing well, it didn't happen because they just woke up one day. There was something they introduced in their environment, and whether it was CIS or somebody catching the Holy Spirit at church, something happened, and you're there, and that's what trying to help document that. So to the extent you can share more about that, Dominique, go ahead.
Yes, so I want to make sure that I'm understanding correctly. So you're saying the programs that we have as far as CIS, they're servicing the youth, but you're trying to see what is happening for the parents.
Yeah, my sense is, because I've had, at several of our graduations, I've had parents come up to me, and I noticed that, like, after the third one, there were at least five students, and I say students, kids, but their parents also got a scholarship. And the parents said, when I saw what my child was doing, it motivated me. So that's what I'm trying to make the linkage back to, that if then part of that is, you know, maybe it's something CIS is doing, maybe it's something somebody else is doing, but, you know, the child is the motivator, but also to get through and get somebody to make that behavioral change, it takes a little bit more. It's just not something that goes off like that. In some cases, it may. I mean, it happened to me one time in school. I got embarrassed, and after that, I forgot about girls, and it was all about being straight A's. Teacher embarrassed me when I wrote a little love note. She read it out to everybody, and I just said, no more for girlfriends. And just, I became a straight A student from fourth grade all the way through high school. And, you know, those things happen, but there are other things that I think happen, and I'm just trying, I think what she's trying to get at and what we're trying to get at is, what are the things that CIS does? And so my sense is it's not just the kids that benefit, but it's also the parents.
Yeah. That's a great question. And so what I
just know it's hard to study and to concentrate if you've got somebody yelling at you or somebody fighting in the background or, you know, throwing things or just, you know, TV's up loud. To learn, you've got to be in a conducive environment.
So I might say before Dominique goes, so there's a lot in that question and in what Commissioner Duncan Hall has asked. I think one thing that may help, I mean, it's hard to overstate, you know, or to understate what CIS is bringing to the whole family. You know, your child being stabilized, your child having access to food that hopefully is, you know, some of which is benefiting the family, your child, you know, having access to programs and connections, having what's largely, you know, incredibly talented social workers, you know, going in and working with, you know, a kiddo, it definitely rubs off on the entire family, and there's linkages to resources and programs. We know that happens. I think that, and I'm remiss, I think the legislative session just kind of got us in trying to schedule, because Sharon worked really hard to try to schedule something, but maybe, Sharon, we could plan, you know, a CIS morning, maybe the morning of our September board meeting, not August, but maybe our September board meeting, and spend, you know, 9 in the morning till noon, and really see, go to one of the properties, maybe do it at Meadowbrook or do it at one of the other properties, and actually see firsthand kind of what the impacts are and benefits, and do a deeper dive where you can actually see it. And we're remiss in doing that. That's, and that falls on me. But that might be a way to help see the breadth and scope of what they do. Because when we think about intensive, you know, we love Boys and Girls Clubs to be sure, and they do great things. But that's really a much lighter touch than the kind of work that these two programs complement each other well. We hope our CIS kids graduate to just needing, you know, the more limited scope services of Boys and Girls Clubs. But Dominique, if you want to add anything, I don't want to put you on the spot either.
No, it's totally fine. I would like to add that Bolden would probably be another property that would be a good one to go to, where the CIS programs are very lucrative at Meadowbrook and at CIS, at Bolden, and so that you might see more of the components that you're kind of looking for, where it's the parent that's being either encouraged by the student or vice versa. But I did want to kind of go off what Leilani was saying, is that in our family self-sufficiency program, we are giving those resources. And one of the things we are mentioning, especially to those that come in and say they do have youth in the home, is saying, yes, make sure that you we have the CIS program here, especially at Santa Rita and at BTW as well. And so we're encouraging for them to get into those programs. And then when we are mentioning that, many of them are then saying, yes, my child did mention this. They are doing these great things. They were excited about going to these programs. I do understand, Mr. Ritchie, that there is kind of a hard way of us being able to numerically kind of track that. But we know that those conversations are being had. So we would hope that whatever is suggested in the future when we do have this breakfast or the meeting that's had, that we are able to maybe put some other things into place so that we can enhance that in a way, so that we can be able to track that a little bit better.
And the one thing that I would like to add is that at the end of every year, first, I will say that when we do our goals with students at the beginning of the year, we work alongside families because we know that when families are well, students will be well. And so for us, it's a full, whole child, whole family support. At the end of the year, we do a end of the year survey with parents as well. And so what I will do is I will ask our researcher to pull them out so that you can hear firsthand from all the parents who say, we could not have done this with CI without CIS. Not only did they help my child with mental health, but they helped me with mental health. Oh, they helped me get to my job. My child graduated because of CIS. So I would love to share that with you all. And we have over 10 years of that information. But when we give you the end of the year impact report, I will give you this previous year so that you can see. The last thing that we also ask our families is, would you recommend us to someone else? It's a score that we take very, very serious. And I believe that HACA scores is between 90 to about 95%. And that is unheard of, first of all, in corporate America and also in nonprofit. In a nonprofit rate, 75% of a key indicator is healthy. But because we spend so much time with your families and because we are working on helping them survive trauma, they see us as a partner. And I think that those scores will elevate a little bit about what the commissioner was talking about our work that is inclusive, holistic, and really family-centered.
So let me just say a couple things real quickly. One, to my fellow commissioner, Duncan Hall, I really appreciate your questions because you have a way of always sort of asking the quantitative questions to make sure that we're able to hold everybody accountable so that as, you know, you're doing your job and helping the board do its job because we're stewards of the public's money. So I appreciate that. Two, let me just also say to Lilani and Sharon, given that Commissioner Duncan Hall is really our Chancellor of Education, I'd recommend getting with her in advance next time and just kind of walk through some of her questions because her questions elicit really good answers that help us all to do a better job of telling the success story. So I don't take her questions as criticism, but as getting the information that we need to be able to tell people that we're holding everybody accountable, that we can show the public benefit. And after this past legislative session, the word that keeps coming back is, what's the benefit for the public, for their tax dollars they're spending? And so in order to better tell that story, her questions will help us to do that. So, again, I would just recommend you get with the chancellor.
Can I ask?
Okay. I have a new title now. I hope you all appreciate that.
We're accountable to two people, TEA and our commissioner that loves to ask questions with you all. I think that we welcome accountability, and we believe that it is why we have been able to prove success these past 40 years, because we welcome it and we never take it personal, because at the end of the day, these are all our children. And when HACA children succeed, we all succeed. And when all AISD students succeed, that means that the entire Austin community succeeds. So we welcome these questions. We welcome accountability. And I would love to build a much more closer relationship so that we know exactly the type of data that will inform your decisions a little bit better. So I am grateful for those questions.
Sharon, let me ask you, I'm gonna put people on the spot with their schedules. Sharon, are you back and available to visit next week by chance? And Commissioner Duncan Hall, would you be available next week to
depend on the day and time. I have several meetings scheduled already.
Yeah, sure. Sharon, are you back next week as well?
Yep. I am free Monday through Diane will be there. Diane is the person who she's my boss. She tells me what to do, when to do it. And so I think if we can check with her, I want to move any meeting that I have to make sure that I am meeting.
Why don't we see if we can get, Commissioner, if we could get you together with Sharon and with Leilani and Dominique. I think that would be really helpful. Certainly, we can have one other commissioner join that conversation as well without violating open meetings. But so if two of you would like to go, that would certainly be fine. But most importantly, I think, you know, for accountability's sake and to get you the data, that's so important. And we will I'll check with the board and see if we're able to do a September meeting to do a deeper dive in CIS, because I think all of us, you know, we've invested, you know, over the last 10 years, you know, $7-8 million in this partnership, maybe more. And it's really vital that we provide not only good oversight, make sure we're getting good value, but also that we're upholding our end of the deal as well. I mean, it's a partnership, so it's a two-way street, and we can't, if we're not doing good oversight, then and that means giving you all the data that you need, then we're not doing our jobs. So that's on me. Let's work on that and see if next week we can pull together a meeting that works. I know people are traveling and doing a variety of different things, but if we can make that happen over the next week and a half, that would be great. I think a couple of hours of data would be, and Sharon, I don't want to put you on the spot, but we may ask you to come here, we may ask you to go to another location, but if there's a way to go to CIS's headquarters, I had the privilege of visiting recently, and just being there in the space was also really, really powerful as well. You know, it's centered around collaboration and around kids and people who deeply care about getting the data right to support, kind of on the back end of the shop, supporting those who are on the front lines working with kids. And I think it would be really, it benefited me immeasurably to be out there. So anyway, I hope we'll make that happen next week. For purposes of today, and not to jump the, because we're going to have a quick conversation about summer programming, but could we move to the vote on the resolution that's at hand, which is the approval. So this is a two-year contract.
Correct.
For this, and I don't
$50,000 increase.
It is, and I'm recommending that after a lot of careful. We've not done an increase for CIS in many, many years, and as you know, we really talked a lot about different ways we've asked them to step up and build some programming around us. And I wish I could bring that more to life today, but I would say we've gotten real value as the stability of our properties and those families.
Can I just make a comment?
Sure.
I ask a lot of questions. I am data driven, and I've been an educator for over 60 years. So when I talk about outcomes, it's because I want to see those students improve. For example, do we know whether or not our students who have received this extra tutoring, et cetera, have improved in grade level reading? It's not just a matter of promotion to the next grade, because we know what social promotion can do. So I'm interested in what the student has gained. And I am not by any means ignoring the value of parental inclusion, because I have used programs myself, have initiated them, have overseen them, which deal with that issue. So I know a bit about that. And I know a bit about what students need to improve and to succeed. And a lot of that success is going to help them gain the kind of inner discipline and inner feelings of confidence that they need. So understand, I have supported this program for years. I will continue to do so, but I'm not going to be satisfied until I have those kinds of answers.
I think that's incredibly fair.
Okay.
And let me ask you this, out of respect for those questions, would you rather we table this until next month?
No,
and come
I don't
back?
Think we need to table it.
Okay.
I think CIS has shown itself over the years to be most supportive and cooperative and doing a job that is needed. I just want to see some improvements in certain areas.
Fully respect that.
Okay. And I will then move to approve the budget of 15, what, pardon me, let me get it correct.
$1,300,000, $650,000 per year for the next 2 years.
All right, there's a motion made and a seconded. Mr. Gerber, so the floor is open for discussion, and Mr. Gerber has suggested that we ought to amend the motion to include an additional $83,985,000 for other costs that CIS paid directly to help our residents with special needs. And if we were to approve it, it would be a one-time payment. And as I understand, this is reimbursement for their out-of-pocket expenses.
Right. To the Sistar families. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So is there a motion to amend the motion?
Well, we need to deal with the amendment before we deal with
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Okay. So is there a motion to approve
the amendment? I move acceptance of that amendment.
Okay, so there's been a motion made to amend the motion to provide an additional one-time $83,985 for costs CSI incurred to help our residents. The motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All in favor? With the motion being approved unanimously, now we're back on the motion as amended. And is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 I saw her. She waved. With that, any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you for your work and look forward to continue working with you.
And Sharon, we'll connect with you next week.
Thank you for your work. Thank you for trusting us.
We'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Dominique, where's Dominique? That's the fast. Come back up front. You're going to report real quickly on summer programming? Do you want a break for this? Why don't we take a go ahead and report out on summer programming?
My name is Dominique Green. I'm a Youth Education Success and Family Self-Sufficiency Manager, and we're going to be going over briefly the summer youth and back-to-school programs that have been happening this summer, just to give you all an update on what's been going on. Next slide. Oh, my apologies. As far as Boys and Girls Clubs goes, Boys and Girls Club of Austin, of the Austin area, the Boys and Girls Club summer camps offer an array of activities and programs that keep the youth engaged and their interest piqued. The meals provided are intended to ensure that the ones during the youth's regular school day are still available. Boys and Girls Club is currently programming at 3 Hawker properties that are listed here, and where they are currently serving 178 students. While there are many core programs, I'd like to briefly highlight their Youth of the Year or Junior Youth of the Year. And as you see this gentleman here in the blue. Yes, ma'am.
Can I interrupt before you
yes,
get
ma'am.
Going into the specific programs?
Yes, ma'am.
I've been out of town for a while, but when I got back, I think I heard that the governor has refused to fund certain programs, food programs, assistance programs for the students in the state of Texas. Is that correct?
That is correct. But for our properties, AISD schools are still providing those meals. So statewide, that is a true statement. It does not necessarily mean that our Hawke families are affected. Because
so we have not been negatively impacted by
that for now, because the Boys and Girls Club has
governors.
Correct.
We anticipate issues. We're concerned about Capital Area Food Bank is anticipating
yes.
big cuts.
Uh-huh.
So we're anticipating that will eventually impact us, but it has not rolled downhill yet this summer.
Correct.
Okay. But it's something that we obviously have to consider
yes,
in the
ma'am.
Future, then, right?
We're very anxious about it. We're also very concerned about changes to Medicaid, which also benefit an awful lot of our residents
oh,
as well.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly.
So we'll stay on top of that, and we'll get regular reports, all of which will be positive.
Okay. Was there anything else before?
No, I thank you for allowing me to interrupt.
Thank you. So this gentleman up here, this young man that you see, Mr. Atal, who is actually in the two bottom photos, is a I wanted to highlight him really quickly and spotlight him because he is the Junior Youth of the Year, and his name is Atal. He was recently, able to speak at the spring luncheon where he talked about his club experience and how much he loves Boys and Girls Club, and he resides at Meadowbrook. And we are proud of him and eager for him to represent HACA and Boys and Girls Club at many of their other events that are going to be coming up. Next slide. As we just heard, CIS just presented, but I did want to kind of highlight their summer program. They have summer field trips, and programming days give students the chance to build on their skills and to grow and learn more about themselves, but still have fun. One student mentioned that her summer started off stressful, but having the supported adult she sees at school in the summer program helped her with her transition into the break. She mentioned these field trips are what she was looking forward to because she gets out of the house and she gets to do fun things. Next slide.
I will speak about the Summer Youth Internship Program, where we have a wonderful partnership with Safa Mattress, who donated $20,000 this year, and we have 12 PBRA and Section 8 students who are going to be attending not only the training and job skills class, but they will be working on sites such as the Boys and Girls Club at EGBI, City of Austin Parks and Recreation. They do get a $200 stipend as a paycheck and as a compensation. And so these are our Futures of Tomorrow and the end of program we already have scheduled for August 1st. We'll be giving them a certificate. This was last year's photo. They were at Dave & Buster's, and half of them were working and half of them attended. But one of the best ways to get our youth really engaged in the job world is not only do they have a resume, they go through an interview process, they receive a letter stating that congratulations, you received this new job, and they also learn how to file taxes. So there's a very, very important financial literacy component that they don't necessarily get in schools that we have at our HACA properties. So
how long does that program last?
This is just for the summer, 3 months.
But the entire summer.
That is correct. So that's another one of those programs on top of communities and schools and the Boys and Girls Club to make sure that we have plenty of activities happening for our youth. While school is out, so that's one of them.
And
yes.
Their page, you said $200?
$200. They have a $200 stipend a month, which, you know, they're able to use. And there's we also have partnered with Dress for Success, where they get their first tie and their first, you know, really getting them engaged into the real world. So it's a very successful program that's sponsored by Safa Mattress.
And where are they working? Is off the properties, correct?
That is correct. So our students, they work at the Boys and Girls Club, either the home club. They work at EGBI on 183 City Parks and Wildlife, depending on where they get where they get assigned to. So they are literally like out there in the real world as interns.
Okay. And do they then take like bus transportation to their place of work?
And we do offer those as part of the program. Transportation is included. Some of them have a car, they carpool together. So they really figure out ways to get there. And we've always been very helpful with whatever they need to make sure that they arrive to their, you know, to their jobs on time, just like it would be in the real world. So
okay,
very successful program. Okay. Next slide, please.
Right, Main Springs. The Main Springs is currently at Meadowbrook, where they have the daycare that's located at the Flores Education and Training Center, or the FETC building. And then they also have their early Head Start. They were also at the early Head Start Center. One thing I wanted to highlight is that they had their annual crawfish boil that was last month, which it brought out many of the families that attend both facilities and was a great success. They currently have about 14% of their families are HACA residents.
One thing to note with Main Spring Schools is they had a recent change of leadership. Colin Swanson has stepped down, but there is a new board of directors interim one that we're working with right now. And Main Spring School is also going to be the partner for Santa Rita Child Care High Quality Pre-K program.
The Yes Incentive Program. So our Youth Incentive Program is a way for HACA youth to gain incentive for being on the AB Honor Roll and or having perfect attendance during the school year. They earn a $15 gift card for each reporting period, depending on if they have AB Honor Roll or if they have perfect attendance. AISD and charter school, elementary, middle, and high school students are among the recipients. We currently have 98 children who qualified for the 2024-2025 school year. The Youth Incentive Trip this year will be at Penn Stack, and we're going to be having it on August 14th, where there's going to be, like, bowling and games. We're going to be engaging with the youth. The staff will, Austin Pathway staff will. It's going to be a lot of fun. Yes, ma'am.
You said that the recipients, the 98 recipients, include elementary, middle, and high schools.
Yes, ma'am.
Just out of curiosity, how many high school students received one of the gift cards?
10%. It's really the middle. The tinier kids are the ones that are getting, right, you know, perfect,
right,
attendance.
Right.
For
so
the many,
why can't we figure out perhaps a more exciting incentive for the high school students? They're going to kind of turn up their nose at a $15 gift certificate.
That's where the summer youth internship program comes in, because they are more the high school students,
yeah,
that are doing the summer youth internship.
Yeah, but
sometimes they qualify for both.
We want those students to have,
right,
attendance issues, I'm,
right,
sure, is very significant in high school.
Yes,
so
that is correct.
Just having a very small number is not quite meeting our goal, is it? So can we think of some other kinds of incentives for them?
Okay, yeah. We'll definitely explore that. Thank you. Next slide, please. So the HACA Resident Scholarship Program. So I believe you have a flyer in front of you, and I've also sent the calendar invitations. Please join us. It is going to be on Friday, July 25th at UT Elementary School at 11 a.m. So I did send the calendar invitation. We are having the record-breaking 40 recipients. We had 37 scholarship recipients last year, over $75,000. And they were awarding, and we're nearly close to $2 million since the inception of the program in 2000 for the scholarship program. As a surprise gift, yeah, we will have Indeed provide MacBooks for all of our scholars. Yes.
Well, you know that this news, that this is the largest number of recipients, makes me very happy. Mm-hmm. And I'm very sad that I am leaving town the day before.
Oh, okay.
I mean, had I known the date, before I had made all my arrangements, I would have changed it, because this is the kind of thing I want to see. Now, because I am greedy as well as interested, I'd like to see 50 next year.
Okay. That's tall order. We're going to do our best. Yes, I heard you loud and clear. We'll do this.
Okay.
Thank you so much. That will mean an increase, right, for the amount. And I think
the
good news is you've always been...
If you get the numbers, we will find,
yes,
the money. Okay.
And we thank the board, right? We really thank the board for that, because we have adjusted our ask.
Right.
Because sometimes we set a number...
Did I speak for the entire board? I said... Let me correct myself, because I do not wish to speak for the entire board. As a board member, I would be delighted to find the money.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So we got two.
It is noted. Thank you so much.
All right. Very good.
And yes. Go ahead. Next slide, please.
And lastly, we have our annual backpack giveaway that we'll be having that will be on the site from the week of August 4th through the 12th. August 4th. And it'll be over about 1,500 backpacks that we give to all of our PBRA and Section 8 properties so that the children can go back to school and have those supplies that are in great need.
We have paint, scissors, crayons, notebooks.
No. So last year, last year the American Veterinarian.
The American Veterinarian.
Yeah,
so yes,
they donated those backpacks.
Yeah, they donated about like 600 backpacks last year. It did have the veterinary logo on it, but they were very sturdy backpacks,
very sturdy.
And a lot of the kids, mm-hmm, use them to school.
Yep.
So, but this year we have different backpacks,
yep,
this year. But yes, whenever there was a donation, we went ahead and. And we also use those backpacks for during the holidays, right? And also during Mayfest. So it was very, very helpful to have that donation from it's a veterinary academy, I think, is what it was. And yeah, is she still here? Oh, I don't know if she's there. Yes.
Is it possible to, I know kids are sensitive to
them not to help them.
We can. Yeah. Well, just to kind of conclude is those backpacks are all gone. They've all been dispersed to our kids and to our families. So we won't see those backpacks anymore. But, yeah, definitely we can keep that in mind for any you know, future donations. Next slide, and I believe that is all. Thank you all for your support in Austin Pathways and youth programs. I think you've heard a lot of us between Dominique and I, but we appreciate your support. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dominique handled her first appearance hazing ritual that we go through here very, very, very well. So in the Texas legislature, and the chairman appreciates this, when a new state rep comes to speak, the other state reps will bombard them with just absurd questions for an extended period. And it's always amusing to watch, and they just tease them and keep them up there uncomfortably long, kind of like we've done for you. Mr. Chair, I think we're ready to move on to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda. And because Commissioner Carrington is in an undisclosed location, you'll be serving as chair for purposes of this one as well. So we've been
undisclosed, did she say?
She's on travel. She's undisclosed. She's not here.
Well, that I do.
So the meeting's been called to order. A quorum has been certified. Is there anyone wishing to speak from the public? And hearing none, we'll move on. The consent agenda is item number one. I'll turn to you.
The consent agenda is presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding the approval of the board minutes summary for the board meeting held on May 29th, 2025.
I only accept the message.
Second. So it's been a motion made and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We go to item number one, which is the presentation, discussion, and possible action on resolution number 272 by the Board of Directors of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, authorizing the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation to execute any and all documents, take any other action that is necessary or desirable to facilitate the acquisition and development of the Oveta Rosedale development, which will consist of multifamily housing units and associated amenities to be built upon land to be ground lease from the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, and to cause the HHC's Affiliate Limited Liability Corporation to execute and amend their restate operating agreements with Oveta Rosedale LLC and other related documents, including any development agreement, purchase option, and right of first refusal agreement, and cause the company to own the development, cause the company to enter into acquisition and development financing for the development, and to cause HHC's AAHC and its affiliates and our company to execute any such further agreement documentation as necessary or desirable to allow for the consummation of the transaction described therein. So with that, we'll go to Ms. Suzanne Swertner for a presentation and the explanation of the transaction.
Good afternoon, everybody. Today I'm presenting to you Oveta Rosedale. We did bring this to you back in August of 2024 to get approval to do a tax credit application to add us in as the general partner. This is a 9% award that Megan Lash with OSTA Industries received last year. And after the award, then she came and asked us to partner with her, and we were added on as the general partner. This property is located at 4202 Medical Parkway, which is basically on 42nd Street and west of Lamar, very high opportunity area. This will be currently, the lot has a couple of businesses that have moved, so we'll have to demolish. That's what I get for sitting here for so long. Demolish those buildings and then build. There will be 70 family units. The affordability will be at 30%, 50%, 60%, and just a couple of 80%, so that as people earn money, we can just requalify them at a higher rate. They will be efficiencies, one bedroom, two bedroom, and three bedroom. On the first floor, we will have a pre-K. We have not signed a contract with the specific pre-K provider. We just have to do that by the time we finish construction. And we will be offering, obviously, some adult services as well as the pre-K for the younger kids. This is in the Austin ISD School District. It serves Briker Woods Elementary, O. Henry Middle School, and Austin High School. The lenders on this deal will be Legacy Bank and Trust for the construction loan. And then once we have finished the construction and rented it up and convert to the permanent debt, Boston Capital will provide that permanent debt. We did have some construction gaps, so Central Texas Housing Accelerated Fund did provide some money to cover those gaps, as well as the City of Austin provided some rental housing funds from the general obligation bonds. Our equity partner will be Hudson Housing. We have partnered with them before, and the equity pricing is at 85 cents. And so we're really excited that Megan asked us to be a partner on this property. I think with the affordability, the wide range of bedroom counts, and also the pre-K is going to make it just a really great opportunity for us. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, so this is really a very small lot, a little bit more than half an acre. So is it going to be one single building then?
Mm-hmm. It'll be one single building, and I think it's five stories.
Five
mm-hmm.
stories, okay.
Yeah. And this is about the size that Megan really does pretty much all of her properties, because she's really, really into doing the 9% tax credits, mm-hmm. and usually they're around 70 to 90 units, mm-hmm. around, 100 or less, mm-hmm. and she does a really great job.
Well, I was pleased to see the fact that we are going with this one as low as 30%.
Yes.
Do we know how many are in the 30 and 50% range?
Yes, I did provide that in the summary.
Yeah,
oh, pardon me.
So there's,
it's right there in front of me.
Yeah, there's.
Ignore that.
7, 30%.
Yeah.
And 28, 50%.
Right. Okay, I got it. I'm looking at it. Sorry about that question. If she has, and this is the first time we're partnering with her, is that correct?
No, it's the fourth time.
The fourth time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What other properties, and when she does this, you're saying she's really into the affordability range.
Oh, yes. Her properties are a work of art.
Mm.
We just
really?
Have the ribbon cutting for the RET this week, and just from the design, the decorations, mm-hmm. the interiors mm-hmm. and everything, it's mm-hmm. just, it's amazing. And then she's got this guy that does murals on the sides of the building as well.
There's one really close to here, right?
It's not ours, but
yeah.
Aria Grand, if you just go south on 35, right?
Right,
just
before
like
you get on the freeway.
Two blocks down,
okay.
You'll see it.
Okay.
But we have partnered with her on Elysium Grand, which is off of Mopac and Oak Creek.
Okay.
And then, so it's north of 183.
Okay.
The RET, and then Katie Lofts she was involved in. And Katie Lofts was also with Sally Gaskin, but it's a PSH deal off of 35 and...
Mm-hmm.
38th Street.
38th.
What does she do about parking?
There will be parking on. I think there's some parking on surface parking, and then some parking at the bottom of the building.
Okay, but it's not going to be a garage per se, parking garage.
Yeah, it's more of a kind of a platform type.
Okay. All right, that's me.
I would agree with not many developers. I would say their properties are works of art, but they are beautifully designed and thoughtfully designed. This was a project that irked us to no end because this was the project that beat us out last year for tax credits. That's right near Central, and she has been such a good partner that she thought, let's bring in the Housing Authority into this deal. Truthfully, some of the funding from it is going to go to help benefit our redevelopment at Santa Rita, and we're in the first position for getting awarded tax credits this year. So it all worked out. And but she's been a true friend and someone who has really worked hard to keep us giving us opportunities for great projects. We're in our first public permanent supportive housing deal at Katy Lofts that opened up about 3 or 4 months ago, 6 months ago. And that's been really exciting to be part of that, 100% helping homeless persons.
And she's
local. She is local, but she does a lot of development, not just here, but in Dallas. And really,
she's got a partner that's in the Dallas area, so they do development here and mainly in Dallas, in Fort Worth.
Yeah. But why don't we get Megan to come by and visit next time? It might be worth. It's very.
She asked if I wanted her to come today, and I said I didn't. Really.
Let's get her to come next time, and maybe do a little presentation. See it if we don't get out to one of the properties. But again, this is a property that you've seen a couple times now, and we're excited that we're ready to start building on it. It's time.
So yeah, if you all approve it today, we will be closing next week.
Okay. So I do have some suggestions. So. Based on what we've just dealt with. So I think in future presentations, I think I would like for you to sort of outline what are the public benefits associated with this. So from my perspective, and it's just to give you an example, if you took a comparable property in this area and looked at price out what the rents are compared to what the rents will be in this development, I think that's one way to define the public benefit, in that you're providing affordability to families who otherwise would pay more. I think when you look at the number of 30% AMI and 50% AMI, that's below than what the statute requires, which is 80 and 60. So think in terms of how would you, if you had to go before the city council and they ask you, well, what's the public getting in return for this, what would that be? And so that's what I would encourage you to think about when you bring these presentations to us so that we can help articulate what the public benefit is. I think the other public benefit is that it's in a high in an area where there are a lot of jobs, so that you would reduce probably traffic congestions. Those are, sort of the intangibles, but I think you've got to think about what are the benefits and how we articulate that for projects of this. What are the other benefits that the residents possibly would receive who live in these developments? I'm not sure what they would be. Whether Megan is offering
free child care or the pre-K is free.
That would be something I would think I would put in big, bold, conspicuous letters. So I think what I'd like to see with the approval of the board is you got the background, the process, staff recommendations, but I'd also just like to put a section for the public benefit. So we are documenting that we're attempting to identify all those. So whether it's Texas Housers or folks at UT, we can clearly show them we've already thought about this, we've documented this, and so it will get the staff to think about other ways to identify other public benefits that we can articulate to others.
We can surely do that. We'll start doing that on all of them going forward.
Okay.
That's the wisdom of somebody who's just been through the legislative session.
And I was also preparing this to go through the next legislative session. So we need to put
hopefully
together.
Hopefully not too soon.
Yeah, really.
We yes, sir. We'll do that. Any other questions about this particular transaction? Anything from council?
No.
We'd recommend approval of Resolution 272.
Aye.
Abstilla moves. Duncan Hall seconds.
All in favor, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We go to item number three. This is presentation discussion for the Riverside / Vargas QOZB condos one property. So I'll let Ms. Wertner walk us through this again, but we are being asked to consider approval of this particular item, and I'll let you, rather than me reading the entire caption, I'll let you walk us through it.
All right. Thanks. It's a pleasure to present this project. This is a partnership with River City Capital. It'll be our fifth partnership. We did bring this to the board back in April of 2023 to purchase the land, and we were approved. This one is right next to Urban East, which is also the partnership with River City Capital, the same equity partner, Battery Global Advisors, and LDG Development. And we did Urban East in two phases. We're just about probably 50%, a little over 50% complete on the second phase. The first phase is in full lease up. We're really excited about it. The reason we brought this land back in 2023 to you was because we knew that once we got Urban East closed, we were excited to be able to take that other block and kind of monopolize part of Riverside, since it's really getting taken over by a lot of market rate properties. This will also be in two phases, and this phase is 357 family units. The affordability, it will be what we consider workforce housing, like Ron's acquisitions, 10% at 60% AMI, and then 40% at 80%, and then the rest at market rate, but we always discount the market rate. This will have efficiencies, one bedroom, two bedroom, and three bedroom. We are looking at offering specials for the AISD teachers. I know Corey Older that works for River City Capital. I believe his mother was a teacher, and that's kind of the in he has, and he's very kind of gung-ho on whatever we can do to help AISD retain their teachers. We wanted to do that. The schools that this serves is Allison Elementary, Martin Middle School, and Travis High School. The lenders will be IBC Bank, and we have used them several times before, and then the equity again will be Battery Global Advisors. And this equity partner has partnered on all five of the deals that we've done with River City, so they're a really good partner as well. I think the nearest bus stop is right on the corner of Vargas and Riverside. So as you said, there's plenty of opportunity for them to use buses to get to work and not have to worry about using their car and stuff. It is a very high opportunity area as far as being close to jobs and schools. We want to work with ACC as well to offer them some discounts on rent for their teachers as well. So, I open it up to questions.
Yes. We're basically saying that all of these, except for the designated 10%, is 80% AMI.
Mm-hmm. Which is pretty high. Yeah, in this area, it's really in need of that affordability type.
See, I don't consider that affordable, 80%. I'm sorry. I never will. So I just accept that. 60% fine. Questionable.
And it's more geared towards like we call it the middle, the missing middle. Mm-hmm. That has, you know, they make too much money to live in a tax credit property, mm-hmm. but they don't make quite enough money to live in a market rate property. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we say 80%, that's all the way down to, you know, 69%. Because you have 60 to 70. It's all of that from 60% to 80% mm-hmm. in there. So it's, like I said, it's those that may make a dollar more than 60%, so they can't afford, or the TDHCA won't let them stay in the tax credit properties.
Okay,
so we kind of want to do is, you know, we're getting great affordability in Megan's Ovetta, mm-hmm. but we want to be cognizant also of that missing middle that, you know, is makes a little bit more, but can't afford the high rates everywhere else.
But if you're really trying to attract teachers,
mm-hmm.
and most teachers aren't earning more than $60,000 to $70,000. 70 would be very high for most teachers.
And that's what we're working with to discount rents for them. Okay.
And how would that work? I mean, what percent discount would they get?
That's what we're trying to figure out, what we would need to give them in order for them to be able to live there. And I know, thank goodness, the Texas legislature just passed where they're all getting raises. Mm-hmm. I come from a family of teachers. I know what they make. Because this one's new and we've got that time between now and then, because, you know, rents are going to go up by the time this one is built. And that's what we want to really dig in and talk to AISD and figure out what that point is where we need to offer.
Okay. And I like the idea of including ACC in that
mm-hmm.
as well.
So I've got some questions, and so I like the idea, but these are questions not to be critical, mm-hmm. but just to help you think through and sort of the from the other side. So how do you market to teachers and don't run afoul of the fair housing laws? In essence, you're marketing to a specific group of folks, whether it's teachers, plumbers, but then you're not making the same effort to the other general population. You're treating kind of one group different from the other. So I'm not being critical, but I'm just trying to help us think about how we're going to have to ask that question, because there will be some people who will ask that. So council, how do we not run up against the fair housing laws?
It does fall into the, like, there are the hometown hero programs, like even for mortgages and rental, you know, they offer specials for first responders and stuff. So
maybe before Sarah, before you go, I might just interject. You know, for every property we have an affirmatively furthering fair housing and marketing plan that's attendant, you know, with it. And so in those plans, you know, we talk about prioritizing, you know, housing for all. But that we are doing, you know, outreach to, you know, unique populations that we think might be particularly struggling, that we've identified are struggling. Certainly teachers, you know, certain types of workers, you know, and certain types of public service professionals, you know, law enforcement and others. And oftentimes those folks are better organized so that when we're in touch with them, you know, they're creating awareness among their members as well. So we're serving the general population. We're not violating fair housing laws, but we also recognize that there are some unique needs that exist. I think the fair housing law is flexible enough to accommodate some of that, at least in how they're approaching these various plant marketing plans that we have to, you know, document, show, and produce, that show we're being fair to all, but that we are targeting places that we've identified as, you know, folks needing affordable housing. But I'm sorry, go ahead, Sarah.
I think also, obviously, they can't prioritize AISD teachers over anyone who walks in off the street and may otherwise qualify for one of the set-aside units for lower-income individuals. I think it would be probably a targeted marketing, and it may even be an AISD-run marketing to their employees, of just knowing that there's a place out there that is offering a discount for their employees. I'm assuming it would be conditioned on their continued employment by AISD.
Right.
Can you pull the microphone closer to you?
Yes.
Okay, that's better.
I'm assuming the AISD would be involved in the marketing mainly, and the property would just be offering that discount.
Okay. That's, you know, that's helpful, because I know there are some who would question why you're targeting one group over another. And I just want to make sure we have a good, strong answer for that.
Yeah, and we can look at the I don't think the management agreement has been finalized yet, so we can look at how that handles these various incentive programs that might be implemented at the property, and maybe each time that's done, it would come, you guys would get a chance to look at it and think through it then.
And what I would also ask is, you talked about having an incentive for teachers or some sort of discount, and again, to the extent you're giving them a discount, you're not giving the plumber or even a nurse. So just think through that. I'm fine with it, but I think you got to think through to make sure you're doing it in such a way as that you are legally protected and you're not violating any fair housing or any other sort of housing-related rules as it relates to disparate impacts. But I like the approach. I just want to make sure that we've dotted all I's and crossed all our T's before we do it, and then we have a really good way to articulate it to the public, because I do think that's another benefit you can show, because this is a group of professionals who really do need housing. To the extent they can get housing that's closer to their places of employment, again, you reduce traffic congestion, travel times on the roadways, wear and tear on the roadways. There's a lot of ways you can document it, but I want to make sure we've thought through all of that. The other thing is just to make sure is that, because these are like 9% deals, obviously, I think we've do something with the city council, right? Some resolution or something like that?
This one is a workforce housing deal, so we did not take it to city council, but the 9% has.
That would be the other thing I would want to document, is that the other public entities that we've notified, so to the extent that they're not getting the tax revenue each year from, if there was a private developer who did it, we've given notice, they know. So I'm just thinking through all the arguments that are made in the past legislative session, so we can address those on the front end.
Understood.
Can I ask, Ron, can you come up for a second? Can you come up? Sorry. So if the board wanted to, this is more of a policy question, not about this specific project, but if the board, you know, getting back to Commissioner Duncan Hall's question, just playing out for staff, you know, if we wanted to say, you know, 10% is no longer good enough, we want it to be 15%, build a less nice pool, value engineer the project, and squeeze 15% at 60 out of the deal, or 20% at 60. Let's start with 15%. What does that do in a macro sense?
Well, for those that have already been underwritten by the lender, uh-huh. and you know, the design and everything's been done, mainly has already been underwritten by the lender, that would reduce the amount of loan amount we can get. So we would really need to know, like, if we wanted to make that decision at the board here today, then future projects that people brought to us, we could implement. But, like, this one, it could possibly kill this one.
And I also think you got to think about long-term here. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do a lot of naturally occurring affordable housing. Over time, as rents increase and we manage those rents, people that weren't affordable now fall into the affordable category because rents keep going up, and so those AMIs adjust. So where we may start at 10% at 60 and 40% at 80, 5 years from now, 4 years from now, even 3 years from now, that paradigm has shifted to more 60s and more 80s because we manage the way we increase the affordable, the market rents. So it moves people into that affordable category. So, I mean, I think, like, if you look at our portfolio, even on the acquisition side, where this is really the biggest topic, I would venture to say 75% of our units, which we were only required by law to do 50, I would say probably 75 to 80, and maybe higher would be below 70, probably mostly in 60s to, you know, 60 to 80 range over the entire portfolio, because over time you manage those units to where, you know, some people will always keep 50%, exactly 50% affordable, and that's it. And they're not going to go one unit over. But see, we don't manage our portfolio that way. Secondly, the deeper affordability, again, you got to remember, these are not tax credit deals. These are not subsidized. This is private capital and private debt. And so the deeper you go, the bigger and bigger the gap is, the less proceeds you get because your loan amount shrinks, because your rents are shrinking, and therefore your investor has to put in more gap dollars or more investor dollars, which lowers their returns. And so it's a financial game of you know, how it works. Some deals work better than others. But I think the best answer is, we can show that by looking at our portfolio that we've had since 2004, over time, that while we started out at a certain level of affordability, it may have been here. Now it's, you know, 90% of those units are affordable. I didn't know if I was supposed to stand.
So, Ron, let me ask you a question. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Commissioner Carrington, are you still on?
Yes, she is. She needs to unmute.
Commissioner Carrington, if you could unmute just so we can hear, confirm you're on, that'd be great.
Okay, I think I'm unmuted.
There you go. Great.
Did you have a question?
No, not really.
All right. Well, I have a question, Ron. So on this particular property, this is a new construction, right?
That's correct.
And so the land itself is completely undeveloped?
That's correct.
So in terms of the property that's being paid on the raw land, who was paying that property tax?
The tax was paid by the developer. Mm-hmm.
And so when they all of a sudden, so then when we acquire it, it goes off the tax rolls.
If we were to close this deal, yes. Right now, it's currently in the developer's hands.
Okay. So then, do we know exactly what the lost revenue would be to the school district? You see where I'm going?
Mm-hmm.
And is there a way to let them know in advance? Or because what I don't want is for one of them, like, for instance, I know AISD is struggling financially with their budget.
Right.
And so even if this was
like $100,000 a year they were getting, and all of a sudden it's $100,000 loss. You know where I'm going with this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how do we address that issue?
I mean,
I'm not looking to give them money back, but in terms of a notice, so they're not surprised.
Well, we certainly have talked to the staff there, and you know, and interestingly, they're actually doing the same thing. They've set up a corporation to go and do it. Now, they're using some of their land, but they're also accessing other land as well that potentially is taxable, and so they've become quite the developer here in town as well, working with some of our partners like NRP. There's a lot of need, and everybody's trying to hit a bunch of need. I hear where you're at.
So in essence, what I'm doing is I want to make sure that we give notice to like the city, the county, school district, hospital district, and everybody up front, so they're not looking as they're going through their budget process, realize, oh well, that was produced revenue X, and this year it's not going to produce. Just so we can make sure they're aware, so we're not. Because I think there's been a heightened awareness. Well, I think this is, you know, everything we've been doing is above the law and everything, but now with this new heightened awareness, with the traveling HFCs and losing revenue, da-da-da, I just want to make sure that we are letting folks know in advance, so if somebody has something to say, we can kind of work through that. So at the end of the day, nobody can go to the legislature and complain about what we're doing. They may complain we're not building enough at 30 or whatever, but they can't say they didn't know, that we hadn't worked with them, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, I think that goes hand in hand, too, with the public benefit that you've asked for, that we could show the benefit of that exemption and what, you know, you lost $100,000 on your land, but, you know, you're gaining, you know, if these were market rent units, the differential between that market rent and what 60% is and 80% is over a period of 10 years, you know, is more than going to make up for that $100,000, especially if we're appealing to people that will move into your district, I think, you know, and show those benefits. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I get that. Because I think the deep thing is, from my perspective, just thinking about it, you've got somebody who comes in, and if they're paying at 60% compared to what they would be paying if they were paying the market, at least in my mind from an economic standpoint, that savings, most people either apply back into buying stuff, either for the unit they live in, other goods, food, et cetera, et cetera. So that sales tax revenue that's being generated that goes back to the public.
Agreed. Totally agree. I mean, those are all to your point of showing what the public benefit is of these deals, and I totally agree.
Okay.
Totally agree with you.
All right. So those are the things that I'm looking at in terms of sort of documenting, that we ought to be thinking about how we can document, because, again, you know, we don't ever talk about, well, somebody's going to have higher earning power, so they're going to spend more money, because that's what economics does. It looks at, okay, you got more money, people tend to spend more, and that means there's more tax revenue flowing. You know, that's the whole reason why you got tariffs and taxes now. But,
we won't go there.
But in any event, there's, in essence, there's a way to bring more money back into the economy, which helps the public overall. So,
The jobs created just on the construction piece alone, you know, is going to be huge to that.
Okay. So with that, are there any additional questions of Mr. Kowal or Suzanne?
I believe Commissioner Carrington has left the call. So it's just the three of us.
Okay.
There you go.
So with that, the chair will entertain a motion to approve resolution number 273.
So moved.
There's been a motion made and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries.
Commissioner, there's no need for an executive session. There's no reports on the sign. We'd ask for a motion to adjourn. AAHC.
Motion by Commissioner Apostolo, seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We go back to the Housing Authority agenda to approve item number 3, which is resolution number 2908 regarding the Oveda Rosedale development. We just had a discussion on it. Is there any further discussion that need to be had?
You're just approving it at the HACA level.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. So hearing none, the chair entertains a motion for approval. Commissioner Duncan Hall made the motion, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Item number 4, and this is approval for the Vargas Apartments Phase 1. We just discussed this. The chair will entertain a motion to approve item number 4, which is resolution number 2909. Motion by Commissioner Apostolo, seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And there's not an executive session that needs to be had.
Correct. There's no, we do have a couple of reports we want to share with you, if we can, real quick.
Go ahead.
Laura Bodai, our Vice President for Assisted Housing, and Barbara Chen's going to come forward as well. So we have moved into what is called shortfall. Shortfall within the assisted housing program means that you've made commitments for the use of your vouchers more than what you actually have authority to then you have funding for. We've been in this position before. We were in it several years ago. We've been in it twice in the past. It's not necessarily a bad thing, because actually there's some other funds that help you to potentially, you can actually see more funds come to your baseline in future years. But we did want to let you know that we're in a little bit of a shortfall. We're not actually in shortfall quite yet, but we're anticipating that we will fall into shortfall probably in November or December. Laura's going to quickly walk through this item. We have some slides, but I just want to set the table for you that it's not, shortfall sounds like a frightening thing. It's caused by the ups and downs of the federal budget process. You know, some years there's more money, some years there's less money, but we still have to make commitments, particularly in our project-based voucher program, to help people develop programs to serve the homeless, as well as other commitments that we've made out there. We want to live up to those commitments. And HUD doesn't want us to not live up to those commitments. So what they do instead is they put you into shortfall, and there's about 1,000 agencies across the country that are in shortfall. And we just work through it over a period of time, and then we'll be out of shortfall again. And then probably in 5 years again, we'll be in shortfall again. But it's important for you all to know, just as part of the management of the program, and Laura and Barbara, Barbara especially, this is Laura's first rodeo with shortfall, but we have a lot of folks in her team who've dealt with it before. But why don't you give the quick and quick
let me
version.
Just ask a question, just sort of looking at this. So when you say projected to lack sufficient funding, is that because we made commitment X? So X is, let's say, 150 vouchers. We committed to fund those.
So it's partly. So I have actually some of the contributing factors, but
hold on, let me just finish my question, because I'm trying to mentally get there. So we got 150 vouchers that we committed to, but because the increase in rents in the marketplace, we only have enough money really to fund 130 of the 150, but we committed to 150. So now. And then also because Congress didn't appropriate from the last congressional year as much money as we thought prior to us making a commitment. So there are two things working there. Mm-hmm. So that puts us in a position where we're in a shortfall, correct?
Yeah, there's a lot of guesswork. I mean, yes, there's a commitment to a certain number of vouchers, but
hold on one second.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to get to this point.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
So the lack of sufficiency is not because we've misspent any money.
Correct.
Right.
Or spent money in an inappropriate way for some other category, but there are other factors, and that's what I'm trying to get on the record.
Mm-hmm.
There are other factors, either A, the market increased.
Right.
Which, we try to keep ahead of, but it's hard because it's something beyond our control. And the congressional funding, the way the cycle because the budget year is supposed to start October 1st. Sometimes they don't approve the budget. There's congressional continuing resolutions. Mm-hmm. So we're only – the money's dribbling out. It didn't come all out like it's supposed to. So those are things beyond our control. So the lack of being able to meet our commitment is not because we misappropriated money.
Right. So it's not mismanagement. Yeah.
Just, okay. Yes. Yes.
That's what I'm trying
to give you a report.
Okay.
Right. Right. So, okay. So I'm just – this first slide is just a brief definition – again, just to refresh you on what shortfall is, and as Mike said, so despite implementing reasonable cost-saving measures, so we do a lot of analysis to do our best to predict, right? There's a lot of guesswork there, but we have a lot of tools that we use to predict. So it's projected. A shortfall means that we are projected to lack sufficient funding to cover housing assistance payments for voucher participants, okay? Next slide. Thank you. So again, as Mike said, we have gone through this before. We had a shortfall in 2019 and also one in 2023. Each year, hundreds of PHAs, this year is exceptionally high, experience funding shortfalls. Anticipating these gaps, HUD does set aside supplemental funds each year to support affected PHAs.
That we can apply.
Right. So this year, 2025, HUD has allocated $200 million in shortfall funding. And according to HUD's projection tool, HACA is expected to enter a funding shortfall late in the end of the year, so November into December. So we're not technically in shortfall at the moment, but we are projected to be by the end of the year. And again, this is not mismanagement. We have strong program management. But we are facing the funding gap partly due to timing issues, as we just discussed. We're looking at, you know, promising, you know, utilizing issuing vouchers and then having that guesswork on the voucher utilization, when that will occur. We have made a number of project-based voucher commitments, and there's a lot of guesswork there on when the construction of those projects will be completed, et cetera, et cetera.
So let me give you just a quick example.
Please.
We have Katie Lofts, which is a project, the Megan Lash project that we talked about. That's 100 units that we are providing the vouchers for every unit at that property. So when that property gets built, all 100 units become available for rental, and those vouchers become activated, basically. So that's a press on the program, more so than you would see in the tenant base side, where, you know, some months it may be 20 units, 20 vouchers or 30 vouchers, and we're able to navigate a little more carefully. With the project-based program, you got a whole building, a whole complex coming online. And we've made commitments because those complexes that we're committed to in the project-based program serve our homeless neighbors. And so we've got, you know, 7 or 8 of those projects, maybe even more, 10 of those projects, coming online. They're in your book. Coming online at different points. And when they come online, and HUD's encouraged us to do it, when they come online, it puts tremendous stress on the program's funding and the availability. And that also pushes us into shortfall. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I want to add one thing. Can we go back to the timing issue, the previous slide? Yes. The shortfall has so-called shortfall set aside. It's how HUD provide funding, budget authority, housing authority, how they do it. What we are dealing with right now, everything is not because we mismanaged. Okay, we've done a very wonderful job here. I know. So it's all because of timing issue. How HUD fund housing authority? In our case, I say calendar year. The funding is based on calendar year. How much we receive this year? We receive $85 million for 20 approved the budget for 2025. It's based on how much we spend in 2024. So like Mr. Gerber's example, and also we have a VASH, those special programs are referred by the other housing authority. We did not, the additional unit, Candy Loaf, we did not spend a penny. So HUD, by HUD the budget on their how they calculate our current year's budget, nothing. They do not approve a penny a budget for those new units come live, come starting the construction completed in 2025, we do not receive any. But you have to remember all the project-based voucher was, they were all approved by HUD. HUD is aware of it. It's just how their OMB, when they prepare the budget, they cannot say that because they don't have data. So that's why HUD always said that $200 million set aside. So in our case, we only receive $85 million. That $85 million actually, in a way, is just help to maintain, to continue to pay for those the same number of families we served last year. Doesn't include any funding for new unit, for Candy Love, for our new referral from the VA office, all those. So it's just a process. That's why we say it's a timing issue. It's just a hard process. But over the years, so like Mike was talking about, we do that, and not just us. Trust me, not just us. Everywhere, every housing authority I've been through, we apply for show for once a while, you have to, because it's always a curve. And especially in our case, we have a higher number of referral from the other the third party agency, so we don't have any control. We also have all these new units from the project based voucher we committed that we did not spend a penny, so that was not in her the calculation for our current year's budget. So what I'm saying is, it mainly for the where we, why we are in this situation, we have to apply for the shortfall. And it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing at all. So it's all because of timing. It's also because of how HUD calculate, project housing authorities, budget authority for the next few, the future year. So it's just a timing. Really, what we are doing here is because of timing issue. Okay, I just want to make sure it's not clear. It's just not worrying
Thanks, Barbara.
Please, next slide again. Thank you. So a little bit more info on the contributing factors here. As Barbara mentioned, we have a number of special programs that operate out of that same bucket of money, such as VASH, FYI, these programs. And we have, again, a number of PBV commitments. Just some numbers there. In 2024, we had four PBV properties come online. That was 181 units. In 2025, so far, we have three, 122 units, but we have another 100 units in the pipeline. So 2025 will be five properties, 222 PBV units that, again, we're not going to see any money for in this year until we start filling those units. We'll see it next year. So these programs, though, serve largely individuals experiencing homelessness, and HUD supports encourages their continued issuance of vouchers. So this is not a restriction for shortfall that they are at all promoting or even suggesting, right? These are programs that are encouraged to continue. Next slide, please. So we have already, this is the last slide, we have already submitted the applications for shortfall funds. And we do meet all of the requirements in shortfall. We have implemented a number of cost-saving measures. We are meeting with the shortfall, with HUD's shortfall prevention team on a monthly basis. And then what will happen in the future is as the shortfall prevention team identifies our needs as we come up to that shortfall gap funding, gap in the funding, they will request on our behalf the funding that we need. It's usually within 6 weeks before we meet the actual shortfall.
So if this makes anyone feel any better, so the amount we've asked for, our shortfall amount is about $7 million?
It's about seven. Yeah, there's no actual amount in the applications themselves, but yes.
Out of a $85, $88 million program. So just to give a sense of what it is. Just for comparison's sake, if it matters, I was sharing our challenge about how this was a couple of months ago, we were likely going to go into shortfall. We were talking at a CLAFA meeting, all the large public housing authorities, and the person who runs the assisted housing program in Los Angeles, and Los Angeles is now headed up by our old friend, Lourdes Castro Ramirez. She used to be the head of the San Antonio Housing Authority. She's now heading up HACLA, but her vice president overseeing assisted housing. When I said, you know, she said, how much do you think it's going to be? I said, yeah, $5 to $7 million. She just laughed. And I said, why are you laughing? She said, we have $125 million shortfall minimum. So that's what they're going to ask for out of that $200 million pot. So we'll likely see a bit out of that pot. We're not going to get the whole thing, but we'll see a little bit, and it'll help get us out of shortfall sooner. But we're managing it, and we're being very, very tight right now. We're not issuing new vouchers except for, you know, to foster youth and to chronically homeless vets and some other special populations. But we're being very, very careful. And, you know, we'll get out of it soon. But it's just we thought it was important for y'all to know we're heading in that direction. By November, we'll be there, and we'll keep you posted. We do.
Do you know what it is?
Yeah. So we serve in our prioritization of for folks receiving new vouchers. We would serve our folks who are coming for. We're not issuing any general purpose vouchers. The only vouchers that we are serving, and they all are in the same pot of money, are the folks who are either foster youth, mainstream homeless, or VASH, veterans homeless.
And what about emergency?
Our emergency housing voucher program is, we're seeing that program end. As you know, we briefed you a couple of months ago on, mm-hmm. on that. That was a program under the pandemic that was supposed to continue to like 2028, 2029, and the Trump administration made the decision to cancel it. And the result is that they've said you've got 18 months to wrap up this program and shift those people, give them priority in other programs. So we're also moving people from the emergency housing voucher program, which was, what, 200 families?
201.
201 over to they get priority under the changes to the administrative,
Right. I spoke, I think, last month or the month before on the admin plan changes. So we did apply a preference. We can't do the regular HCV vouchers right now, even for the EHV, because we're in shortfall, right? So those have been paused since last summer. But we also applied the preference to the mainstream program. So those that are mainstream eligible, they still have to be eligible for the program that they transition to, right? So we're categorizing what the best program for those 201 EHV clients are to transition them to another voucher.
Yeah.
But it's the mainstream program that will be frozen.
The emergency housing voucher program is wrapping up.
Yeah, the mainstream program, we're not in shortfall for mainstream. It's a different funding. It's aside from the shortfall, yeah.
Mainstream is not limited to this $200 million set-aside fund. It's a separate program, totally separate program from this, what we are talking about. This one only including all the special program, not only including those VASH, also FYI, doesn't include mainstream.
This one is VASH in our main.
FYI, FUP.
Yeah, FYI. Other than mainstream and emergency, those two programs are totally separate. Budget authority and all different. This is anything other than those two.
Okay.
Three different sets, not parts of funding.
So we would stop there. That's the chief report. We just wanted you to know, and mm-hmm. it's sorry we didn't quite. We probably should have done it earlier in the when people were a little less. After I've not been here for two and a half hours, but we'll keep you updated on the shortfall as we enter into that process. Quick updates for me. Several of us will be, Carl and I will be, the chair and I will be in New York next week for the meeting of NARO, the summer symposium meeting and the Board of Governors meeting, and I'm sure we'll be briefing you all on the difficult conversations that will be held there about changes that are happening. We've got a lot of these programs are under siege up in Washington. The bill that just passed, the Big Beautiful Bill, doesn't have many housing components to it. But they do have touch on education programming, food security programming, Medicaid. So those other programs are going to be impacted, and we're worried about what that means for our residents. So we'll be talking and learning more about that.
Let me ask you a question. So as I understand it,
there was an expansion in terms of the allocation for tax credit programs.
Yes, of the 9% tax credit program. Yep. And then did the 4% get tied to a... There was an expansion of... So the 9% tax credit program has had an historic cap based on per capita. You get an allocation of credit authority from the Internal Revenue Service because it's a federal tax benefit. So in the Big Beautiful Bill, they expanded that number of tax credits that will go to each state. So in Austin, we typically get 3 deals per year. In this region, we might get a couple more deals because of that expansion of credits.
And then the other thing they did on the 4%, you know, they're coupled with bonds. So now instead of having to fund 50% of the project with bonds, you only have to cover 25% of the project with bonds. So that means that there's going to be more bond reservations available for us under that program.
So a lot more to come on the Big Beautiful Bill and other changes. Big Beautiful Law, I'm sorry, and other changes that will be no doubt coming. I think I'll stop there. Sylvia, anything you want to share? I think we want to take you all on a quick tour, if you have the head for it, of the building. A break, and then we'll do a quick tour for those who are available.
So with that, the chair will entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion by Commissioner Apostolo, seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries, and we are adjourned at 2:37 on Thursday, July 10th, 2025. Thanks.